What happens when a president loses an election but refuses to leave? On January 6, 2021, Americans watched in horror as a violent mob stormed the U.S. Capitol, not in spontaneous rage, but as the culmination of a deliberate plan to overturn an election. This wasn't a riot that got out of hand. It was an attempted coup, methodically orchestrated over 2 months by a sitting president who valued power over constitutional order. The January 6 report, born from over 1,000 witness interviews and millions of documents, reveals how close America came to losing something we'd always taken for granted, the peaceful transfer of power. Long before anyone cast a ballot, Trump was already laying the groundwork to reject defeat. He refused to commit to peaceful transition, ominously suggesting that eliminating mail-in ballots would mean there won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. His strategy exploited something election experts call the red mirage, Republicans appearing ahead early because their voters cast ballots in person, while Democratic mail-in votes get counted later. Trump's campaign manager warned this would be a long night, just like 2016. Steve Bannon made the plan explicit on October 31st. Trump's going to declare victory regardless of reality. When Trump's early leads evaporated as predicted, he immediately cried fraud. His own team found nothing hard and fast questioning the results. By November 6th, his data expert confirmed he was losing. Rather than accept this, Trump sidelined Team Normal, the professionals who wouldn't spread conspiracy theories, and elevated Rudy Giuliani and allies willing to promote absurd claims. Attorney General Barr repeatedly told Trump the Dominion conspiracy had zero basis and was complete nonsense. On December 27th, justice officials spent 2 hours systematically debunking every claim. As they refuted each one, Trump would simply roll on to another. Trump's January 2nd call with Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger exposed his strategy. "I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have," a statement that later formed criminal charges. When Raffensperger refused, Trump threatened him with prosecution. The committee documented approximately 200 instances of Trump pressuring officials between November and January 6th. Presidential targeting triggered devastating consequences. After Trump attacked Philadelphia Commissioner Al Schmidt as a so-called Republican, Reno, threats became much more specific, much more graphic, and included not just me by name, but included members of my family by name, their ages, our address, pictures of our home. Georgia election workers Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss faced racist harassment after Trump mentioned Freeman 18 times and Giuliani falsely accused them of crimes. Freeman received hundreds of threats, fled her home on FBI advice, and testified, "I've lost my name and I've lost my reputation. I've lost my sense of security. All because a group of people, starting with number 45 and his ally Rudy Giuliani, decided to scapegoat me and my daughter." As legitimate avenues closed, Trump's team created fake electoral votes in 7 states he'd lost. On December 14, 2020, fake electors gathered alongside legitimate ones purporting to cast votes for Trump. Kenneth Chesbrough's memos argued Vice President Pence could unilaterally count only Trump's fake votes, yet pushed forward despite acknowledging the plan was slightly problematic in some states and very problematic in Nevada. After Attorney General Barr resigned on December 14th, Trump called Acting AG Rosen virtually every day between December 23rd and January 3rd, demanding action on election fraud. When Rosen explained DOJ couldn't change election outcomes, Trump responded, "Just say the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressman." Trump's plan centered on installing loyalist Jeffrey Clark as acting AG. Clark drafted a letter to Georgia officials falsely claiming DOJ had identified significant concerns and recommending the legislature appoint alternate electors. The scheme culminated in a dramatic January 3rd Oval Office showdown where senior officials threatened mass resignation. When Clark defended his credentials, Donahue dismissed him. "You're an environmental lawyer. How about you go back to your office and we'll call you when there's an oil spill?" Faced with losing his entire DOJ leadership, Trump backed down. After exhausting all other avenues, Trump turned on his most loyal ally. John Eastman's memo outlined how Pence could reject electoral votes from seven states, leaving Trump with a 232-222 advantage. When White House attorney Eric Hirschman asked if Eastman truly believed the vice president could be the sole decision maker of who becomes president, Eastman confirmed. Hirschman responded, "Are you out of your effing mind?" Faced with losing his entire DOJ leadership, Trump backed down. After exhausting all other avenues, Trump turned on his most loyal ally. John Eastman's memo outlined how Pence could reject electoral votes from seven states, leaving Trump with a 232-222 advantage. When White House attorney Eric Hirschman asked if Eastman truly believed the vice president could be the sole decision maker of who becomes president, Eastman confirmed. Hirschman responded, "Are you out of your effing mind?" On December 14th, electors confirmed Biden's victory. Trump's cabinet accepted the result. Trump didn't. At 1:42 a.m. on December 19th, he tweeted, "Big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there. Will be wild." A Twitter analyst called it staking a flag in D.C., creating a fire hose of calls to overthrow the government. Extremist groups mobilized. The Proud Boys restructured and told followers to go incognito. The Oath Keepers stashed weapons outside Washington, hoping Trump would deputize them. By January 6th morning, Secret Service reported people wearing ballistic helmets, body armor, and carrying radio equipment. Warned about armed supporters, Trump responded, "I don't fucking care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me." During his speech, Trump said peacefully and patriotically once, then spent 50 minutes inflaming the crowd with election lies, attacking Pence, and urging supporters to fight like hell. At 1:10 p.m., he directed thousands to march to the Capitol. By 1:21 p.m., he knew the Capitol was under attack, yet chose not to intervene for 187 minutes. Upon learning of the riots, Trump responded casually, "Oh, really? All right, let's go see." For 187 minutes, he remained in the presidential dining room, watching Fox News while advisors desperately urged him to intervene. Around 2:05 p.m., Chief of Staff Mark Meadows told Cassidy Hutchinson, "The president wants to be alone right now." When White House counsel Pat Cipollone demanded action, Meadows replied, "He doesn't want to do anything, Pat." At 2:24 p.m., Trump's first public statement attacked Pence. Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done. When Cipollone pleaded that rioters were literally calling for the vice president to be fucking hung, Meadows revealed Trump's response. He thinks Mike deserves it. Despite desperate texts from Republican allies and his own family, Donald Trump Jr. wrote, "He's got to condemn this shit ASAP." Trump's 3:13 p.m. tweet merely asked supporters to remain peaceful without ordering them to leave. When he finally released a video at 4:17 p.m. telling rioters, "Go home, we love you, you're very special," they immediately dispersed, proving he could have stopped the violence hours earlier. The January 6th attack left 5 dead, 140 officers injured, and shattered America's tradition of peaceful power transfers. The Select Committee identified Donald Trump as the central cause, producing historic criminal referrals for obstruction, conspiracy to defraud the United States, false statements, and inciting insurrection. Beyond accountability, the committee delivered a stark warning. Democracy isn't self-sustaining. It demands constant vigilance. The peaceful transfer of power, once assumed automatic, now requires active defense. As Vice Chair Liz Cheney quoted John Adams, "The freedom of elections forms the very ground of our liberties." January 6th exposed how fragile that ground is and how quickly constitutional guardrails crumble when tested by determined actors. Democracy survived this test. Whether it survived the next depends on heeding this warning now.